Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the AfriCast. It's me, as always. Joining me, as always, is Brendan.
Hello.
And Robin.
How's it going?
And we're coming to you from semi-darkness today, because before we start the podcast, I said, wouldn't it be funny if the lights went out while we were recording it? But Brendan informed me that the lights had already gone out, because when he arrived, the generator in the building was already on. And that's, ladies and gentlemen...
Lady, do we only have one lady?
Yes,
listener?
On the team we do. Nokolunga is.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
That's what we call a segue. Ruin my segue is the first topic of load shedding. Brendan's going to tell us about it, but we're all kind of suffering with it.
Yeah, so if you didn't know, you're clearly not living in South Africa. But we are currently experiencing stage 4 load shedding, and we have been for the last 5 days. So on Saturday, we had load shedding stage 2, I believe it was. It started at. That ramped up to stage 3, and then very quickly after that, it went to stage 4. So the reason for that is a shortage in generating capacity. Apparently, at the weekend, Cyclone Idai, I think is the correct pronunciation, hit Mozambique, and if you are aware of this, you will know that Eskom has a power plant. In a hydroelectric power plant in Mozambique, Cahora Bassa, and the lines that connect Cahora Bassa to South Africa went down because of the cyclone. And as such, we lost 900 megawatts of generating capacity. In addition to that, there's been numerous failures at Eskom power plants within South Africa, and a shortage of fuels and coal.
You could have just stopped it and said there's been numerous failures at Eskom.
Yeah.
You don't need to specify.
I suppose I don't have to specify what they are. But ultimately what that means is that we've had load shedding stage 4 since midday on Saturday. That is what's happening at the moment. And then following stage 4 ending at 11 o'clock at night, it's then switched to stage 2 load shedding throughout the night, which is a little bit concerning, because I think even my memory escapes me now, but as far as I remember, in 2015, we didn't have load shedding overnight, except in some extreme circumstances, but I can't actually remember. It's so long ago.
I think sometimes the power just went out, like, out of schedule.
Yeah.
Just for no reason. And people are like, well, I guess it's time for bed anyway, which is exactly what happened to me when it went out at 11 o'clock last night.
Yeah, so electricity is a scarce resource at this point in time. Yesterday, Eskom held a briefing with media in which, in answering a question about what happens after stage 4 and 5. They mentioned, oh yeah, no, we have stage 5 and 6 after stage 4. And everybody thought that meant that they were going to start implementing stage 5 and 6. As it turns out, that's not the case. They have no plans to implement stage 5 and 6 yet. It's just there in the eventuality that we need it.
Well, I'd assume they had no plan to implement stage 4, but here we are.
Yeah, and here we are. I mean, it's the same thing as if you go onto the Eskom website, onto their load shedding website, you'll see that they have stages 1 to 8 published. And stage 8 is possibly the scariest one that I've seen, because it basically means you have no power for 12 hours a day.
Which is hilarious, because the whole point we have load shedding is to prevent a blackout. But
yeah.
Stage 8 is just half.
But half a blackout is not a blackout,
yeah,
Clinton.
It's literally a glass half full situation.
So, yeah. I mean, stage 5 and 6 already push it up to, I think, a max of 12 hours. From what I could see from the schedules, like, it's about... Right now, we have 8 hours with stage 4. Stage 5, I think, between 5 and 6 pushes you to like 10 hours, and then 7 to 8 push you right to the 12-hour mark. But yeah, so what is going on at Eskom? As far as Eskom knows, Eskom doesn't know, because they currently don't want to tell us how long load shedding is going to be until an investigation into the crisis at Eskom has completed, and that's going to take 10 days.
Does that include the public holiday tomorrow?
Probably not. Probably not.
And then, you know, is that 10 business days? It's like shipping on something expensive.
So what astounds me, though, right, is that this whole thing makes it seem like Eskom realized yesterday that load shedding was happening. You know, it's like that's the impression that I get, is that the management, executive, the president, even Cyril Ramaphosa, like, Did they just realize that there was a crisis at Eskom? I mean, we've had load shedding since last year, since December, mm-hmm. early November, beginning of December. I mean, how do you only realize now that you need to investigate what's going on?
Like, well, my issue is, okay, you do your investigation, then what?
Yeah.
Because
it's not like the investigation is going to find more electricity. Yeah. Somewhere. That's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, South African government and our different departments have a history of, we're going to investigate this, we're going to investigate that, yeah. Yeah. And ultimately nothing happens yeah. afterwards.
You know what's hilarious?
A tribunal has been formed.
On top of all of that, what a lot of people are doing, especially companies, is they're using a generator. What does a generator use for electricity? Petrol or diesel. You know who makes a lot of money off of petrol and diesel sales? The government. So it's not even.
And it's
like,
going up soon, isn't it?
Yeah. April, it's going up.
So they're making money, they're making extra money by us not having electricity, which is hilarious.
And then also, just a reminder, right, because while load shedding is in effect, Eskom is not making money. So it is essentially losing money when the power's out.
I was just going
to
say.
So how is it going to make up that shortfall? By applying for a tariff increase. And NERSA will likely have to give it some form of an increase. It probably won't be as high as what Eskom wants. But that's the simple fact is that we are going to be paying for load shedding one way or another. Whether it's now during load shedding while you have to, I don't know, get mobile data to work, order takeout because you can't cook or whatever you need to do to survive during load shedding. Then when the power does come back, you're probably going to have to pay more for it because Eskom needs to make up the shortfall. Granted, that will only happen probably next year, but we're already facing a 9% increase this year on tariffs, which is... like, what am I supposed to do as a South African? You know, like, I don't earn a lot of money, and now I have to go and make all of these arrangements to be able to just carry out my day-to-day work. I mean, last night when load shedding hit at 8 o'clock, I was kind of thankful because I was like, okay, I can't do anything now. I can stop stressing and just go to bed because this whole thing is so exhausting. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's a mess. Bring a broom.
I was kind of chatting to my family about it, and they're kind of comparing this current kind of batch of load shedding compared to a couple of years ago. And they seem to think that it's a lot better this time.
What? Around,
purely for the fact they can actually plan better.
Oh.
I don't know if you guys feel the same way. Like,
I don't, though.
You're better prepared kind of thing.
So yesterday, for instance, right, my load shedding was supposed to start at 8 and run until 12:30. But throughout the day, I was having power cuts. And not like, oh, it's out for 15 minutes, it tripped, somebody went and flicked a switch. It was completely out for hours. At one stage, it was like 2 hours that the power was out. And like, I went to a mall to go and work, and surprise, surprise, the mall's generator had run out of diesel. So it's like, okay, what do I do now? Like, all of my options are exhausted. Like, I have battery power for a little bit of time. But I personally don't think that I can plan for this because the schedule tells me one thing, but then will the power come back according to the schedule? Because what I'm finding is happening more and more often is that when the power comes back up, stuff gets fried, like instantaneously. So I don't actually know whether this is – like I can't plan, to be quite honest with you. To answer your question, no, I can't plan for what – my day is going to look like. I can get a good idea and say like, oh, power's going to be off between 12 and 4. But I can't then say, okay, I will be back online at 4. Like I can't guarantee that. And also there's this thing that Eskom seems to do where there's this 5 minutes after the time where it says, okay, so if your schedule says 8, at like 8:05, your power's still on, you're like, maybe they forgot about me.
I'm living on borrowed time.
Maybe they forgot about me. I still have power. And then the power goes out.
Yeah, I got
like,
that this
damn.
Morning. It was meant to go out at 8 o'clock. About 9:30, nothing had happened. So
yeah.
am I special? Am I the chosen one? No, it went out.
Something I have heard, though, and I can't verify this, but I have heard of people who stay near ORT that have not experienced load shedding.
That's interesting to stay near important buildings, mm-hmm. kind of government structure.
Mm-hmm. It's going to drive up the property prices.
Yeah, go and stay near an airport. That's a great idea, especially if you like sleep. It's a fantastic idea.
I would take electricity over
the noise.
The sound of planes.
I would.
The sound of planes soothes me right down, dude. If you're an Uber driver, you're right there for your fares. Yeah, it sounds like
This sounds like a great idea. Everybody, all South Africans, just move around the airports and we'll all have electricity. But yeah, so just on to sort of brighten the news a little bit, Eskom is expecting a shipment of diesel to land in the country tomorrow on Thursday. And that is expected to alleviate load shedding somewhat. I don't think it means that we are going to have load shedding gone forever. I think that it might mean that we move from four to stage three. So that should arrive tomorrow. Hopefully, we get an update from Eskom. Pravin Gordhan, the Minister of Public Enterprises, said that him and Jabu Mabuza, the chairperson at Eskom, or the chairperson of Eskom's board of directors, said that they would pledge to be more... here's the quote here. "We've had load shedding before, and I can give you the guarantee that we'll communicate better because we've not communicated adequately," Gordhan said.
Thanks, that helps.
But this is the thing. I sort of agree with what he's saying, because I write most of the load shedding stories, and it's usually a generic copy-paste thing that's pasted into an Eskom on an Eskom letterhead, telling you when it's going to happen. "We apologize. Shortage of capacity. Please treat all points as one."
I think people's frustration stems from the fact that there's no solutions in place.
Yeah, but also tell me what the problem is. Tell me how many power stations are down. Tell me how long it's going to take to repair them.
S is F.
Just to play devil's advocate, but I mean, how does that change things?
It gives you a better sense. Like, okay, so me speaking personally for a second, like knowing what the issue is gives me a better understanding of how long it's going to take to fix it. Like, if you tell me that a power plant is completely down, it needs X amount of rands to repair it, then I have a little bit more understanding of how long it's going to take. Right now, like, I wrongly assumed, given the communication that we've been given by Eskom this whole week, that they were already repairing power lines to Cahora Bassa. And that's just not true. They haven't even started, because it's a cyclone emergency zone at the moment. And it just feels like if the messaging was clearer from Eskom's side, like, "We're doing repairs to local stuff," because we're doing repairs. Okay, so everywhere then. Is that the assumption that we're led to? I just feel like having better information coming down from Eskom is something that we need. It gives people a better idea of, hey, listen, this is how long stuff's going to take to fix. Like, just telling me we have a shortage of capacity. Well, how big is that shortage? Are we talking 50%? Are we talking 75%? How much? And then as a citizen, I can then go, oh, okay, you know what? Maybe I should switch off my geyser every day. Or maybe I shouldn't use these lights every day to try and save more power. Because, like, I disagree that we all have a role to play in load shedding. I disagree with that statement completely. But I think that we can conserve power a little bit more, especially during this time, and maybe that will help alleviate Eskom somewhat. Obviously, I don't know.
I wholeheartedly hear what you're saying, and I agree with you that better communication would help. I'm just of the opinion that people are so frustrated now that telling them that X, Y, and Z is happening instead of just a blanket statement isn't really going to help anything. And every day that
you could be right,
we have load shedding, the argument for privatization is just made that much stronger.
At least on my Twitter profile. Anyway, stage four load shedding is in effect. Let's move on to something a little bit lighter.
Robin?
More flexible.
More flexible. What a segue. That's how you segue.
It's going to be strange if anybody turns off the podcast now. Like, I wonder what they talked about. Like, to ballerinas or what?
Anyway, Robin, yes, tell us.
Yes, so this is, I guess, kind of a follow-up story from MWC.
Yeah.
I got the chance to go over to Huawei's offices here in Sandton and check out their foldable phone, the Huawei Mate X. A whole bunch of media was there. Unfortunately, they only had one sample device there. It was a pre-production model. So the one we're going to get in South Africa might be a little bit different. So the device itself, the folding mechanism is akin to a book.
Okay.
Except it opens essentially from the outside as opposed to on the inside.
Yeah.
So galaxies, the Samsung Galaxy Fold, for
looks
example,
like a book.
Looks like a book. So the foldable screen is on the inside.
Yeah.
The foldable screen for the Huawei Mate X is on the outside.
Okay.
And the pre-production model they had for us there, it looked interesting in the fact that where I was sitting and during the initial part of the presentation,
yeah,
I could see the reflection of lights in the room on the actual display itself. And you could see, for lack of a better word, creases.
Okay.
I want to stress again, this is a pre-production model, things can be different. And I chatted to some of Huawei's execs about it, and they kind of mentioned that this is the kind of material they're using for their flexible displays is plastic-based.
Okay.
They mentioned that Corning, who do Gorilla Glass, if you're unfamiliar, they say they're roughly 2 years off from having foldable technology. So we're still a ways off from having a lot more durable foldable displays.
Yeah.
That said, Huawei say that going the plastic route is better for now, purely because it's more flexible
and makes more durable sense.
than glass.
Yeah.
And in terms of the crease I was chatting to you about, so the hinge that they've designed for this is called the Falcon Wing.
Yes. That's amazing. That is the best name for a piece of kit I've heard in a long time.
Isn't that some sports cars have this?
Falcon Wing. So I think what the whole kind of point of it was, so if anyone knows anything about engineering in a fulcrum hinge, for example,
yeah,
when you fold it over, there's a little bit of gap.
Yeah.
This Falcon Wing is designed in such a way that it allows both sides of the flexible display to lie flat against one another, so it closes nicely and neatly, essentially.
Okay.
I got to touch it and play with it a little bit.
And what is it like?
It feels really... The form factor is really interesting.
Yeah.
What I like about this, what Huawei's version is of a foldable phone, is that the fact that the display on the outside is a lot larger than you would get on the Galaxy Fold,
for example. Yeah, a lot of people I don't know if complaining is the right word, but they're looking at this and they're saying, what are you even going to do with that? It's such a small screen.
Yeah, I agree. It's good that this I prefer, sorry to detract for a second, but I do prefer Huawei's solution of using the entire display or half of the display that folds into the entire display. I think that's just a better solution than what Samsung did with two displays. That's just silly.
I'm sure the problem there is that when you put it in your pocket, or, you know, you just keep it around. At least with the Samsung one, when you close it, that big inside screen is protected somewhat.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I think I was also kind of chatting to the execs as well, and they were kind of mentioning that protecting the device and ensuring that it doesn't get scratched a lot is something they're really thinking hard about, because invariably, because the entire outside of the phone is a display, it's going to get scratches and scuffs.
Especially on the back. I mean, let's be honest, like the back of my phone is disgusting. It's like, if I don't have a cover on it, it's bad. It's like scuffed and scratched, and it's not a fun situation.
Well, they do have a cover for it, and they say it's going to be launching in South Africa when the phone does.
Did they show it to you?
They didn't show the cover.
I need to see if that even exists. And how would you even make one?
So I guess it kind of looks like the one you might use for your S10, like that kind of fold, like almost like a book kind of style.
Oh, okay.
So it slips inside there. So you'll have to open that up and then open up the phone.
Okay, that makes sense then.
I don't think it's a perfect solution right now. So hopefully when the phone launches locally, they'll have a few more options available. Yeah. Speaking of which, the phone is set to launch between July and August.
Oh, wow.
This year in South Africa.
Wow.
That's what that's the kind of window they've given me.
Did they give you a window on the price?
That they would not do. I kind of asked them, would this be a lot more expensive than the, I think it's $2,600, which is a global pricing. Earlier this year, they said it shouldn't, which probably means it will be.
if we interpret the marketing lingo.
Yeah, reading between the lines, I assume it will be. And also, I kind of asked them point blank, will this be the most expensive phone Huawei has had in the country to date? And they said yes.
Okay, well, easily. So, I mean, will it be more expensive than the Porsche phones?
Yes.
Are we still on the...
Clinton, can you just move it a little bit closer to me?
Are we still on the bandwagon or the theory train or whatever that these phones are going to cost 100,000 rand in South Africa?
I wouldn't be surprised if they cost 55,000 to 60,000 rand. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think also don't expect a lot of phones to come to the country. I was speaking to them again, and they mentioned that much like the Porsche design phones, a very small battery brought in initially, and they'll kind of gauge consumer interest from there and then look to perhaps bring in more if they want to.
But did anyone even buy those when they were here?
The Porsche ones? Yeah. They say they did.
I've seen a few people with them.
Did they sell whatever amount?
From what I understand, they brought in, I think, 1,000 units of each. I'm not too sure how many of those 1,000 sold.
Yeah.
I've seen a few people with the Porsche design Huawei's.
I'm almost sure that, they sold some.
What's going on with your microphone? Please just wiggle the thing there.
Hello?
Yes, that's better.
Okay. I'm almost positive that, sure, they sold some, but there's still a lot sitting in the stock, or they were sent back to the wherever they came from,
yeah,
where they were
made. Yeah, I hear you, because the premium that you're paying for the Porsche design is far different from the premium that you're paying for this foldable.
Yeah, the one absolutely was for like a name brand and a different design. This is some future tech that they haven't brought the cost down of yet, so...
So I find these phones really exciting. I don't think many people are going to buy them, though.
The price point is simply out of reach for most people. Even the people that can afford to buy, you know, your top-end Samsung, Huawei, or Apple phones.
Yeah.
This is still going to be difficult for them to
Even when I spoke to Samsung following the reveal of the Galaxy Fold, they were like, this is not going to be for everybody. It's basically a statement saying, this is what we can do. But yeah, I don't know how practical these phones are as well.
It's just that I don't see this being a big enough leap to make people do that. So if you go back to the first iPhone, right, that was a big leap because we went from having a screen and an input to the screen being the input. And that was a quantum shift, a big leap in how we use it. Having a bigger screen that can fold, I don't think does the same thing. And I don't think it's going to kind of spark as much interest as the original iPhone is going to, and you need that interest so more people buy, so you have more capital,
so you get critical mass, and then
you can make the technology cheaper.
Yeah, look, I don't think you're ever going to get to the stage, or anytime soon at least, where you're going to have a mid-range foldable phone.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen for the next at least, I reckon, 7, 8, perhaps even 10 years.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to be that.
I also
long,
do though. Wonder whether this is just a gimmick. Like, I played with the Fold, and it was mind-blowing. It really was mind-blowing. But I do wonder whether, like, this folding screen technology is more gimmick than
I think a lot of it depends on software, actually, what kind of features and functions they can build into the different form factors. Because if it just opens up and it's a larger screen, fine, you have a lot more real estate, but that's it.
I think it's one of those new technologies where somebody's going to be like, oh, we can use it for this. And then everyone's like, holy damn. And then everyone uses it for that. I think we need the killer app. We need that big, we need the tech out there so they're in people's hands. And then somebody's going to come up with a good use for it, obviously, because they want to make money and they'll find out a way to monetize it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it might be something that happens. And then next year we're like,
Did you get to hold it? What was it like?
It wasn't as perhaps revolutionary as I was expecting.
Yeah.
I think with the Galaxy Fold, the reveal of the actual
screen
display itself is a lot more dramatic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it really is.
That said, I really love the form factor of the Mate X a lot more.
Yeah.
I think it makes a lot more sense. And also, it just gives you more space to work on compared to... even if you're using it in the folded up mode or the unfolded mode, it gives you a lot more space to work with. So I think in the long run, it probably makes a lot more sense to go for that if you have 16 lying around.
Yeah, look, obviously we don't have confirmation of price, but I mean the Galaxy Fold was rumored price we heard floating around was 60,000. And now this, we're expecting 60,000. Like, 60,000 phones in our lifetime. I can't actually believe it.
You can buy a car.
What I'm actually kind of more interested to see develop in the next couple of years is what does that to the tablet market?
Oh, yeah.
Because to have a device that can kind of bridge gap between both would be very interesting. And I think perhaps that's going to probably be where they're going to play.
Well, I mean, that's where I see it being used, is by, like, your business exec that spends more time in an airplane than a boardroom. That needs to be able to work on a plane. Like, rather than having to carry around a phone and your tablet and your magic keyboard, whatever they call these things, the Bluetooth keyboard, like, now you can just use one device. But then also that brings into question, what's the battery life like when you're using both of those displays?
That's actually an interesting point, because they actually didn't mention how much battery life you get from the... So what they've done is they did the revolutionary thing of placing two batteries inside it.
Oh, split, yeah.
Split between the different sections of the
phone. This is one of those times where Apple actually did do it first, and then the Android guys are like, oh no, we've done this. But like, yeah, they had that already. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so it only combines up to 4,500 milliamps, which sounds like a lot, but the Mate 20 Pro has 4,200. So
yeah, and the S10 has 4,100 milliamp hours.
Yeah, so it's in the greater scheme of things, doesn't seem a lot. So I'm also kind of interested to see actually how much battery life you're getting out of this.
I mean, Huawei does have some good fast charging tech.
Well, they have I think it's 55 watt.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Laptop
power.
Yeah, so I suspect you're going to be charging this
hot charger.
That's why they're gone for 55 watts.
Well, have they provided any like usage times?
Nope.
Because I assume when the page comes up, they're going to do one of two things. One, they just won't talk about how long the usage is. Or two, they're going to say, you know, you'll get X amount of hours, and then there'll be a little asterisk. And then you're going to scroll all the way
in
down.
Lab and conditions. Tested in lab conditions.
No, and it's going to say when folded,
yes,
when using half the screen.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like, oh, you get 1 hour with the phone open. And I can see that happening. Yeah, it's very interesting. We'll see. We don't have, like, you said they have, like, a release window, but we don't know. You know, things happen. Natural disasters, delays, whatever happened.
Shitting, yeah.
If we get it this year, that'll be cool. Man, I really want to know the prices just for, like, morbid curiosity, because it's going to be hilarious. And you know people are going to be on Twitter on day one being, look what I got. I spent so much money. Give me some retweets. I just want to... So it's unfair. I'm the only one in the main team here the next local...
What we should do is we should get both of them, and then you can give an unbiased view on both of them.
I thought you were going to say we can, like, make a sandwich or something. That would be great.
I'm sure we can ask for the funds. We would be doing this for research purposes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is there another folding one...
Not that we know of yet.
That's not the same. That's like a wallet. I mean, fold flat. These are the only
flat
two.
Ones. No,
no. Yeah. I think, so but Apple might have something.
No,
and Razer might still have something coming.
If any other company has it before the end of the year, I'll be very surprised. That being said, we are getting, you know, we are probably going to see a Note 10 before the end of the year.
Oh yeah, that's Samsung, also true. Hey?
And that might be another folding phone, but I highly doubt.
Well, it makes sense, though, because my immediate thought was why the Galaxy Fold and why the Mate X don't have styluses.
Yeah. Mm.
So the,
it seems like a perfect
There's no space,
it.
Probably, inside.
True.
This is one of those times, like, really, we ran out. Does the Mate have a headphone jack?
I don't know. I didn't even think about it.
I also don't know about the fold.
In folding it that we didn't look at this headphone jack. Okay.
I don't think it does.
Robin's going to look that up, but we're going to go into our final topic. We're going back to Brendan.
To Google.
I'm not going to say it first. You tell me how you think it's pronounced, because I didn't watch the presentation.
So it is pronounced Stadia.
Stadia, okay.
So
the first time I read it, it sounded like Stadia.
Yeah.
It sounds like an Afrikaans word.
So it's the plural of stadium.
All right.
Stadia. One stadium, many stadia.
But why?
Because, ladies and gentlemen, Google,
what does it even have to do with Stadia?
Well, let's get into it, right? So Stadia is Google's newly announced, not new yet, newly announced game streaming service. Not as in watch people playing games, actually play games right from within your Google Chrome browser. Or whatever browser. I don't think it's... no, I think it is definitely...
It would have
to be Google Chrome. Anyway, let's talk about this very quickly. So game streaming is something that everybody's talking about. Microsoft was speaking about it last year. And then Google also tested this last year with Google Stream, where you could play Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
So for anyone who's listening to this, we don't mean streaming like on Twitch.
We mean like actually play the game. So
it's like Netflix, but you're playing a game.
Exactly.
Yes.
So
you don't need to download the game. You don't need to have the hardware. A server somewhere in the world runs the game for you, and you only streaming...
game being played.
Yeah, you're streaming the output, which is the video with your commands, and the input from your controller, your keyboard, or your mouse, or whatever, goes to the server, it plays the game, and then it sends you the output.
Thank you.
Just as a quick explanation.
Okay, so Google is able to do this because it has data centers all around the world, except Australia and Africa. And then it also has 7,500 plus nodes, which I assume are just points of presence. They didn't explain it fully. They just said 7,500 nodes.
That's a lot of nodes.
Exactly. Around the world. And that allows them to be able to deliver games to people or game streams to people with very low latency. How low that latency is, I don't know.
Well, you shouldn't say you don't know. They didn't say.
Yeah, they didn't say. Sorry. That is correct. They didn't say what the latency was. But essentially, like Clinton said, you would be able to launch a game from a YouTube video is what they showed. So you're watching something you play on YouTube.
Really cool.
And then you can click a link in the video that then launches the game within 5 seconds.
In that video, it actually looks kind of amazing.
It does look really, really cool.
It's like, oh my God, we're in the future where you can watch, you know, your favorite content creator play something, and then immediately it's like, oh, that's cool, play. It's not like you're going to go to Steam, you're going to look at it.
Download it.
You're going to use the Steam plugin to see if it's cheaper somewhere else.
Yeah.
You have to take out your card to buy it, wait for the download, and then like, okay.
The most first world of problems.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of those things where if you saw it in a movie like 5 or 10 years ago, you'd say, oh, that's really cool.
I wish I could do that.
And now it's happening, but maybe it won't be that smooth yet.
So, yeah, click play, 5 seconds, you're in a game. And you can stream it at 4K, 60 FPS. The problem is that I don't think Google didn't actually mention what sort of internet connection you would need to run this. So we did a bit of digging. When Google was testing Google Stream last year with Assassin's Creed Odyssey, to run at 1080p, 60 FPS, you would need to have a minimum of 30 megabits per second.
Okay, so is that up or down or
both? I think that was both.
Okay, so
asynchronous line.
Okay, so on top of that, I was actually watching a video from a Digital Foundry.
Yeah.
And they had some exclusive information. Now saying they're also working with the game developers to produce the software to work on less than ideal internet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hilarious to me because their less than ideal situation is 15.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's not one of those things where if you go on like Netflix and like, you can still get HD on 2 megs.
Yeah.
They're like, 15 is considered really bad.
Like, I mean, I was just, the language that I saw from the international publication that alluded to the 30 megabits per second was like, as low as 30 megabits per second. I'm like, yo, dude, I like just got 20 megabits per second. And
yeah, well, I'm kind of wondering locally because
hell.
Yeah. Most houses and most families go for either 4 or 10.
Yeah, I like even the people next door to us, they have like a family of like 5 or 6. I don't know how many children they have, but they currently have a 4 megabit per second line. I know this because I helped them with the internet recently, and like I'm currently using a 20 megabit per second line, like with my family and stuff, but it's like 4 of us, and I'm pretty much hogging that 20 megabit per second line, and I still don't think that it's enough.
And
I don't know how people deal with 4 megabits per second.
And all we're talking about here is speed. We haven't even spoken about
latency.
No. We'll speak about that. But what about data usage?
Oh, yeah.
Because even though, I mean, even some people I know in America speak about this, even if you have an unlimited package, eventually you get to a fair usage policy ceiling. And I read somewhere that this is completely unconfirmed. I saw someone said that they were in that beta of Assassin's Creed Odyssey on Google Stream, and they were using between 1 and 2 gigs every 2 minutes.
Whoa.
So it was almost a gig per minute of internet usage. And you can completely understand why. If you're doing even 1080p at 60, but I think they were going closer to 4K, a gig a minute is so much.
Yeah, it's a lot. And then also what you must take into... Google also announced their Stadia controller, which connects via Wi-Fi to the data center.
Yeah, that's really cool.
More data that you then need to take into account. Just to give you an idea of what... So essentially, Google showed off what an instance of Stadia would look like. So essentially what your PC would look like that you would be playing on. The GPU is 10.7 teraflops of power, has 56 compute units, and high bandwidth memory 2. The GPU is specially developed by AMD. for this?
It's an RX 580. So I'll put a link to it, but again, with Digital Foundry, they kind of looked at those specs and they gave it an educated guess. They think it's one of the Intel CPUs. I can't remember which one.
Yeah.
And they think it's an RX 580.
So the CPU is a custom x86 processor running at 2.7 gigahertz that's hyper-threaded, which alludes to the Intel, and then AVX2. And then memory you'll get is 16 gigs of total RAM, up to 484 gigabytes per second transfer speed, L2 and L3 cache of 9.5 megabytes.
So
in comparison to the current generation of consoles, a PS4 Pro has 4.2 GPU teraflops, Xbox One X has 6.0 GPU teraflops, and Stadia will purport to have 10.7 GPU teraflops. That's just from the presentation. Obviously, this is what Google has told us. Whether it is 100% accurate remains to be seen.
Sorry, just to go, last time I mentioned that Foundry video, it was also funny to me how we were speaking about, like, what's the minimum internet you can use? What's the minimum everything? And then the dear Foundry guy was like, so Google told me they can actually stack those servers on top of each other so you can get even higher frame rates and even more resolution by using multiple of those servers at once. And he said, he was talking about storage, and they've got an ungodly amount of storage. So the guy's like, oh, so now we can go even higher than like 100 gigabytes per game. And I was like, no, don't do that. Make the game smaller. There's no need for the games to be 100 gigabytes just because we have the capacity now. This guy's like, how high can we go?
So, just two more things that I want to mention before I give a little bit of an opinion here is the platform or Stadia will run on Linux.
Yeah.
And then use the Vulkan graphics engine.
Yeah.
On that, id has already been developing Doom Eternal for the platform.
Yeah, so Doom, the Doom Twitter account said you're going to get 4K 60. And I'm like, oh, I'll believe it when I see it. Doom Eternal is even going to be on the Nintendo Switch. Not at 4K 60.
But. My question to you guys is this going to kill gaming as we know it?
No.
Maybe in like 50 years.
Well, my issue is that, will this even come to South Africa? Will this even be available?
So the launch is happening later this year. They didn't give an exact date, and it will launch in the US, Canada, UK, and Europe. I find it funny how UK and Europe are now split up in regions. later this year. They didn't give an exact date, and they didn't give any indication of a global release. So everywhere
Google has data center presence?
Pretty much. So that means Australia and Africa are out of the question.
Wait, so what is Google's... Because we have some Google infrastructure here, right?
We have a point of presence in South Africa.
Okay.
So we don't have a Google data center here. We essentially probably have a blade sitting at Teraco somewhere, that or whatever data center there is. I just say Teraco because they're the biggest one. Well, they probably have a blade here that then helps connect to Google services and makes things. Because, I mean, Google does have presence in South Africa. Google.co.za works... redirects. There's like, if you ping 8.8.8.8, which is Google's DNS, you get a very local ping. They don't have a data center, and it seems like Stadia requires
heavily contingent on that.
It needs the data center because, I mean, Google needs to be able to customize stuff as and when demand comes in, you know. There's no indication of it coming to South Africa or Africa at all. And I think that is largely due to the fact that our internet infrastructure is not as great as the rest of the world.
Do you know what would have been great? Of all the companies, I thought Amazon would have done something like this. Because AWS, I think they have.
Also, they own Twitch.
Yeah, they own Twitch, so imagine you could have... I'm sure Twitch, they're going to like hijack this idea.
Of course they are. Twitch already has its own game launcher.
Amazon, we have like Amazon servers in the country, right?
Not yet, next year. Data center coming next year.
I keep reading about it. It's one of those things that's like a foregone conclusion. Like, they're here already, right? But I'm surprised they didn't do that because AWS is what makes them the most money.
Yeah.
They have Twitch. They have the server capacity, and they still have Lumberyard, but I don't know. Lumberyard's one of those things that pops up now and again. So just to go back, Lumberyard is a game engine that Amazon developed, and I don't know how much they're supporting it now, but they could have worked a streaming service right into Lumberyard.
So the thing is, Google said that they've been working on the solution for years. The Google Stream project last year was kind of the culmination of years and years of research into doing something like this. And I hear what you're saying about Amazon, but I don't think that Amazon has that... What's the word I'm looking for?
Well, AWS's business isn't focused on consumers.
Yeah, at all. Google
their
is.
Their business, yeah.
Their business model just isn't aimed for that.
I mean, Amazon could have gone to the big name publishers and sold them on the idea, right? And then the publishers could have
I think, like I said, I think their kind of focus is more on the business side of things. So if they went to publishers, it would be to how can we assist you make better games, not necessarily how can you get your games onto our platform.
Yeah, and yeah,
it's probably a worthwhile idea for them to look into.
The one really great piece of news is that video game producer Jade Raymond, who worked on the Assassin's Creed franchise, she is the CEO now of Stadia Games and Entertainment, which is pretty damn awesome, I think. So that's really, really cool.
I have one quick question, though.
Yes.
The Stadia kind of branding and everything, it's very un-Google.
Yes.
Are they separate companies?
So remember, Google is not the holding company anymore. Google is one company within Alphabet.
But I mean, kind of all these Google solutions have a very similar look and feel in terms of branding. So
yeah, I suppose if you look at like YouTube and Google, like their look and feel is very similar. And the amount of like customization that you can go through. I mean, like when dark mode came to YouTube, dark mode came to Gmail like a few months later. So I think what Alphabet is trying to do is maybe kind of say, hey, look, we have all these different companies. And I think Stadia is that sort of thing of, hey, we're part of Google, but we're not a Google company.
I hear what you're saying, because people don't really always think about Alphabet when thinking about
Google. Exactly. I mean, I mentioned to somebody at the weekend, we were talking about Google, and I was like, well, do you remember that Google is owned by Alphabet? And they were like, oh, yeah, I always forget that. Because, I mean, like, nobody cares about Alphabet. Everybody just remembers Google, and also when they switched to Alphabet, they kind of like did it really quietly and were like, hey, we're Alphabet now, how you guys doing?
So I want to flip the question back to you then.
Yeah,
do you think it's going to come here?
Do I think it's going to come here?
Or rather, your question was, do you think it's going to like disrupt gaming, as it were?
So yes and no. Yes, in the very distant future. No, because people still like to own things. Like, I know, okay, so one of the things that I dislike about Netflix is that I am at their whim when it comes to when I can watch a film. Like, if I want to watch, let's just say, Behind the Curve, you should absolutely watch it, it is hilarious. If I want to watch Behind the Curve in, like, 3 months' time, Netflix might have deleted it at that point. And I don't like that idea. I don't like the idea that I am not in control of my game library. Right now... I mean, you could say that is happening right now with game servers for games going down willy-nilly.
Did they give any insight in terms of how the model would work?
So, yeah, that's what I really want to know, because of that thing I just mentioned of it being all streamlined and everything, it's not like they're going to let you play for free.
Yeah,
you're
so
probably going to hit with a buy now.
They didn't mention a fee, and the chatter that I'm seeing today is that that's going to be the real deciding factor what the subscription fee is.
More in terms of... if I'm on the Google Stadia platform or whatever, I see a game I like, I want to play that game, how would it work then? Do I only have access to that game in that session, or am I subscribed to the Google Stadia service and then I can only access the game?
From what I can tell, I did miss a lot of the stream because of load shedding last night, but from what I can tell is that it would work similar to Origin Access does at the moment, where you pay a subscription fee and you get access to a library of games. And then those games would likely either roll out, be on a rotation or something to that effect. In terms of the nitty-gritty, they didn't really go into it, but it appears from how they were speaking that you would get access to a game library and then you could play games from within that library. So I would assume that you would have something like with Origin Access where you have the latest games that you're able to play for a long time and then older games might be phased out. Like if you wanted to play, like say, Baldur's Gate 2, that would then be phased out after launch.
So you can also look at a lot of other services that have been doing this for a while and see how they do it. And that's another thing I wanted to mention. A lot of companies and services have been doing this for years and everyone's kind of not latched onto them, but a company this big has never gotten into it. So that might make the difference. But I think that's going to do it. We'll have links to everything we just mentioned. And bearing no load shedding next week, we'll see you again. So for myself, for Brendan.
Cheerio.
Cheers.
For Robin, you jumped the queue. You jumped the damn queue.
I'm just so happy about Human Rights Day tomorrow.
All right, have a good long weekend if you're taking Friday off. Otherwise, just have a good
day.
Yeah, have a good week. Bye.
Bye.
Cheers.